Four Midwest Guys presents
The Night's Watch, a Game of Thrones podcast.
Night gathers, and now my watch begins. I am the sword in the darkness. I am the watcher on the walls. I am the shield that guards the realm of men.
We watch, we listen, and we remember.
The past is already written, the ink is dry.
I thought he was the man to lead us through the long night. But I was wrong.
I'll show them what Lannisters are. What we do to our enemies.
How do you know this?
That's what I do. I drink, and I know things.
I believe men of talent have a part to play in the war to come.
I will never serve them.
You could help another client of those steps and take that seat.
I'm not going to stop the wheel. I'm going to break the wheel.
They have no idea what's going to happen.
The wheel of war is between the living and the dead. And make no mistake, the dead are coming.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Four Midwest Guys Presents The Night's Watch, a Game of Thrones podcast. Tonight we'll be reviewing Season 6, Episode 3, Oathbreaker. With me today is my brother Aaron.
Hey, how's it going, man?
How's it going, dude? Johnny Z.
I didn't have time to look at my obligatory Tyrion reference tonight. I'm not prepared for this.
You are very unprepared.
You have your alcohol,
Mr.
You're fine.
Tits and God of Tits and Wine. And speaking of tits and wine, hey, what's going on, Steph?
Hi, thank you for that.
No problem.
That's why I married her.
And Mr. Brian Eckenbauer, he's
Follow
back.
That.
All right, hello.
Follow that one, man, yeah.
Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast, your first one, sir.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
No problem. All right, so a very jam-packed episode, although not quite as good as last week's episode, but still very jam-packed. So let's just move into it. So we start off with what I like to call the awakening of Jon Snow. We see Davos in the doorway all of a sudden, and Jon sitting up yet again. And basically, Davos and Melisandre comes in, all shocked, and asked him, what did he see anything in the afterlife? And Jon said, I saw nothing at all.
Yeah, there was nothing.
Making
was nothing.
Every atheist fan of the show incredibly happy.
Apparently.
Well, either that or he was just in random purgatory sort of place.
Or he doesn't remember.
Yeah.
Or maybe he just truly knows nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't.
There you go.
There's a very consistent thing.
But she, of course, then puts it in. She goes, well, you have to be the prince that was promised because Stannis wasn't. So there.
Yeah, her face came back really quickly.
Well, you child-burning son of a bitch. You're dead to me.
Yeah,
in more ways than one.
I agree with you, John. I still hate the bitch, even though she brought John back. But
she's got the hot witch boobs, though, so you can't be terribly angry at her.
Yeah, but they're really old now. We know that. But
then, yeah.
She can't look at them the same way.
That was the sound of collective boners going right into the ground when you saw that scene.
Yeah. I was like,
and my wife is in a state of disapproval and shocked.
No.
So obviously, John is kind of going through it's kind of a broken Jon Snow now because you hear him say, "Why am I still alive?" And he says, "I was murdered for doing the right thing. I tried to do the right thing, but I was murdered for it." So we're seeing maybe a broken Jon Snow here,
maybe a very confused one, if nothing else.
Well, it took him 6 seasons, and now he's finally learning the world he inhabits.
Well, he did just die.
Yeah.
And get brought back.
He was like, "I, people betrayed me, and I was dead. Why am I here? What is this bullshit?"
Well, I thought it was really interesting, because he woke, like, you could tell he woke up, and he took a deep breath, and he was like, and then all of a sudden he started to remember, and then he felt the stab wounds, and he was like, oh my god, I've got gaping wounds.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were watching like an interview with the writers and everything after the episode, and they said they originally wrote out a longer scene with more dialogue, but they were just like, "Oh, let's just let the moment speak for itself. We don't need to have that much dialogue. Just let Kit Harington take the role and just go with it."
Longer dialogue.
Ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh, ow, 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 ow.
Yeah.
Holy shit, I was dead!
There's still a knife in this one.
It's like, I feel like Swiss cheese.
I'm not quite dead yet.
Bring out your dead. Where's that little son of a bitch that stabbed me?
Yeah.
So, Let me throw this out. So do you think this is going to continue? Do you think we're going to see this theme play out through the rest of the season? Is John going to be broken the entire time? I'm kind of wondering, asking questions.
I don't think he's broken at the end of this episode.
Not at all.
No.
Okay. I think he's more focused now than what he was before.
Yeah, because again, like, he finally realizes the world he inhabits, because, yeah, he tried to do the right thing. He tried to, you know, as we discussed in the last episode, progressing the times instead of just holding back to ritual and routine and tradition. And, of course, in true Game of Thrones, you know, manner, that's what happens.
You get killed.
You get killed for doing that, but he now sees it.
Yeah.
But the other thing, too, and I think we'll touch on this plot point later on, is the longtime fan theory of R plus L equals J.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't let John die, because I think that theme is about to get proven this season.
Possibly.
It's heavily hinting at it, if nothing else, for all the flashback scenes.
Or they're at least playing with us. We'll get to that in a little bit. So, to move on just a little further in the scene, he comes out, and everybody's kind of looking at him funny and in awe and shock.
They all think you're a god. But I know you're not. I've seen your pecker.
It's too small.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's like, what kind of god has a pecker that little?
And the other line is, your eyes are still brown. So, meaning and sending, he's not a White Walker. And
yeah.
You don't have to burn his body quite yet. So a little bit of humor.
Hold off burning my body there.
Yeah, just for now. All right, so next scene, what I like to call Seasick Sam. We catch up with Sam and his wife, forgive me, the name eludes me at the moment, and little Sam. They're on a boat for Old Town, and they're heading for the Citadel, and Sam is, basically Sam tells his wife that, or his unofficial wife, that he's sending them to his home on Horn Hill with his family, so that she's going to stay with his family to protect them. That he has father, his mother, and his sister will help, you know, her out. And
Jilly,
is that it?
Jilly,
you should have seen the face,
no,
the look on her face from the moment you said I forgot her name. She's been racking her brain trying to remember the name.
I honestly don't remember.
I got Keely,
Keely, or her? No, not Keely.
No, it's something Jilly.
I thought it started with a D, but I don't remember what it was.
Yeah,
so. During this whole
thanks for that.
And during this whole scene is taking place, Sam is seasick, and they actually show him throwing up, which I'm not sure that was really needed.
It's Game of Thrones. Come on, there's no more envelope left to push.
Hey, we've seen blood. We've seen a whole bunch of other stuff. What's a little throw?
We've seen a guy's head turn into smashing watermelons. For God's sakes, I think we can pretty much, you know.
So what you're saying is, in the next episode, we're just going to see a guy just with explosive diarrhea, just dying of dysentery.
And I would not be shocked.
Yeah,
is what I'm saying.
That sounds more like what's his name? Family Guy creator would do. Anyway,
Seth MacFarlane. Oh, yeah. What was it? The Thousand Ways to Die in the West, thing? Yeah. Well, I'm sure there probably was something.
There'd
like
a 3-minute scene. It's like, it's funnier because it's longer. But I digress.
Yeah.
How did he
Let's just keep this going for 5 minutes. Let's fill up space.
I can go on a whole show about my dislike, but we'll just stick to Game of Thrones.
All right, let's do that. So after this. A little bit of a spat between the two. She agrees. She shows some respect and love to Sam, and she says, if you believe that's right for us, then that's where we will go. So she's being the good wife, I guess, per se here. I don't know. What do you guys think? I think she's showing a little bit of payback to Sam for all he's done for her, or?
I think it's just the fact that she's out of her element. She doesn't know where she's going to go. She knows where she would like to go, but Sam's kind of telling her, this is what we have available to us, where you and the baby will be the safest.
Yeah, because he can't take her to the Citadel, because he says, I don't have a Jon Snow there to help me.
He doesn't have anyone to help pull strings for him.
Mm-hmm. And he also says that, and he's still being loyal to John, because he says, I've got to concentrate on becoming a maester to help John down the line. So, that friendship between Sam and John, that bond continues through. So, kind of cool to see, I guess. I don't know. What do you think about Sam? You think loyal Sam with John there? You think it's a good thing? How do you think that's going to play out going forward?
To be honest, I'm not really sure, just because I'm not I'm not sure where that scene really added in the longer context of it. It might play out to be more important down the line. Mm-hmm.
I think we just got to see where that scene and these characters go. I mean, because I wondered if Sam's usefulness ended when he discovered Dragon's Glass kills the White Walkers, but...
Yeah, I think that might just be the beginning
of exactly
what he knows or what he will know.
Yeah, because he's went through all the history books at...
Castle Black.
At Castle Black, he was going through all those, and that's what led him to become, to say, hey, I need to become a maester. I have this girl here, I have a baby. You know, yes, the baby's not mine, but, and by the way, her name is Gilly. We looked it up.
Gilly,
okay.
G-I-L-L-Y, yeah.
All right. Not to be confused with Gilly.
Gilly, yeah. Okay. Well, same
which
thing.
Sucks.
Anyway, but I think him becoming a maester for Jon Snow is kind of, that's what he's wanting to do, but A, he didn't know that Jon just got stabbed. B, right. He doesn't know that Jon just, and we'll talk about this later, I guess, that Jon has now left the Night's Watch.
Well, yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah, later. Sorry.
Spoiler.
And, wow. I mean...
I think at this point we're already spoiling things left and right.
And the fact that now Sam is heading to Mooseport.
Yeah.
Mooseport.
So, anyway... I mean, there's a lot of things that is kind of, well, why are we still doing this if all this just happened?
Yeah.
But it's because that character doesn't know all this just happened.
Yeah. So do you guys like the character of Sam? To me, it's somewhat of a ripoff of Lord of the Rings in some respects, because it's the same character.
Because it's a fat, short guy named Sam that
has to protect Frodo in the ring.
Right, he's trying to protect Jon.
Instead of being Samwise Gamgee, he's Sam Weld. Whatever.
It is a very similar character in some regards.
Tubby Sam.
Aw.
Just kidding. Anyway.
We love you, Sam.
But at heart, he's a protector. So
yeah, he is.
You know.
He's not the best swordsman. He's not the best protector, but he tries.
Well, he's using what he knows. Kind of like Tyrion, he's using his intellect. That's his weapon.
He needs the intellect of Tyrion, though.
Well, he's not polished yet, like Tyrion is, obviously. That's what he's seeking. All right, so let's move on to probably one of the better scenes tonight, and that was what I like to call Ned Stark's great lie, and the little bit of, or the mystery of Ned's sister. So, once again, Bran is time-traveling back with the Three-Eyed Raven. He sees his father ride up with Holland Reed, who's Mira's father.
Yeah.
And along with two other knights. And they meet two other knights that are part of the King's Guard. One turns out to be Sir Arthur Dayne, the Sword of the Morning. Correct me, sorry. Mm-hmm. And basically, Bran even says that, you know, his father told him that he was the best swordsman he ever saw. Mm-hmm. And also, apparently, he was told that Ned beat him.
Which we quickly learn...
not so true.
Right.
About myths and history.
But before we get to that, they ask the king. They ask these guys why they're not at King's Landing protecting the prince, which is the R and R plus L equals J.
Rhaegar.
Rhaegar.
Mm-hmm.
And they say Rhaegar ordered them to protect Lyanna, Ned's sister. So there's the R plus L equals J theory.
Which we just covered with Jay in a couple scenes prior.
Yeah. Right, so, you know, there they go, you know, hinting or at least screwing with us. We don't know yet. So we see the sword fight happen, and Bran learns the truth that basically Ned is completely outmatched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Going up against the Sword of the Morning, Sir Arthur Dayne. I mean, he was going to die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
if Holland Reed hadn't come from behind and stabbed him in the neck.
Yeah,
but before that, we see Dane not only take down two of Ned's guys.
He took down
everyone. I mean,
him and his partner that was also there. There was another Knight's Guard there.
Yeah,
they took them all down, and that guy falling also, and that was just so cool to watch.
Well, it wasn't even the fact that he had two swords. He had two broadswords in his hands.
I mean, that's really hard to, like, wield like that.
Yeah, I mean, just complete badass. A total Jedi Knight kind
of... And to stab him, stab him from behind like that is kind of a...
No honor.
Move.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No honor whatsoever.
And I think even Bran saw that because he's like, he stabbed him from behind.
Yeah.
He almost sounded disappointed.
I mean, well, yeah, because he wasn't the legend. He built
wasn't the
up.
Legend.
Yeah, what know, was told to him. Right.
There's always a little bit of truth mm-hmm. in legends, but in this right. case,
I think.
Well, there's always three sides to a story: mm-hmm. your side, my side, and the truth.
Right. So.
Well, I think you know we're going to get a lot of that in Game of Thrones too, with just the fact that you know we've seen so much about tradition. We have everyone telling these stories about what happened in the past, and you know. And now with quite possibly the best scenes that have gone on in this season have been Bran going back and seeing the past, because it's been so satisfying for all the fans to see this.
Oh, I agree. It's great backstory. It still makes me think they're at least thinking of a prequel series at this point, because you're going to have people already cast.
Possibly. It depends on how far back they wanted to go with it.
Maybe, maybe they'll be like Arrow and just completely show flashbacks all the time.
All the time.
Or maybe this just is it for the, you know, the prequels. This is all they want to show.
Maybe. There is some credence leaving some things a mystery and wonder, you know, not having to show clarity to everything.
There's also another interesting video I watched too recently about the whole R plus L equals J theory, which is the fact that some people don't believe Rhaegar kidnapped Lyanna. That they actually knew the actual relationship between them was a romantic one. And there's even hints in the episode, like when Sansa is in the tomb talking about Lyanna, she's like, and Rhaegar kidnapped him. Littlefinger looks at her like, that's what you think?
That, he's like, he's is that kind of, what you heard?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of stories that people say that knew them, they're like, no, there was no kidnapping. They truly loved her. Like, even Khaleesi was told that, you know, your brother... You know, your father sang, you know, your father sang, and that's one of the things he did. Like, there's actually been art that depicted Rhaegar as serenading Lyanna. So there's a lot of, I think we're going to see a lot of breaks of mythology when everyone thinks of the Mad King and all these other sides, and we're going to see that by going back to the past and seeing how things actually were, it's going to truly define how the world is made.
And moving on, though, in the scene, the next thing we see is, or we hear anyway, after they've dispatched of Sir Arthur Dayne, we hear a woman screaming, which we presume is Ned's sister. Mm. But is it, it sounds like a scream of pain, but is it a scream of her dying? Or would it
be labor pains?
Labor pains or her giving birth?
Thinking she's giving birth to Jay.
To Jay, yeah.
Which, if in all accounts, would be about right, because when Ned came back from the wars to Catelyn, he brought back the son, and he told Catelyn, he said, you know, I had an affair, this is my son, you know, and she never liked John.
Yeah, she...
You know, she tolerated him because that was Ned's son.
She treated him like the bastard that she thought he was.
And everybody that, you know, and everybody that looks back on him is like, I have a hard time believing Honorable Ned would ever cheat on his wife.
So, we'll see. Also, in that same scene, and I think it's something that needs to be pointed out, Bran calls out to Ned.
Dad.
Screams dad, and Ned actually turns around.
And swears he heard,
Yeah. So, my question then is, does that lead credence that Bran can time travel? He's not just a viewer.
He's not just an observer. He can affect the past.
Well, it's probably true because the... what's his name? The three-eyed raven keeps telling him, no, you mustn't stay here.
Every time he gets
here.
Close, yeah.
You mustn't stay here. You'll affect drown. All this.
Yeah.
And... Brain's like, but it's my dad. I want to talk to him.
He's like, you'll get lost.
Yeah, you'll get lost, and you know. But yeah, I think he could totally screw things up and screw the history up if he gets involved.
So we do not need you retconning, Bran.
So well, and to that point, maybe the three-eyed raven. Maybe Bran can't necessarily get lost if he stays. Maybe he would affect the timeline, and the three-eyed raven knows that could be disastrous. Mm-hmm. If he starts screwing with time. What do you think about that?
Well, either that or you create different timelines. You don't know how this universe treats time travel in that regard.
The butterfly effect?
Yeah, essentially. Either that or he creates different timelines, and thus he's actually can't go back to the previous world and correct things in the same way because he keep creating different timelines.
We're not going to do Lost again, Bran.
No. No.
All of a sudden you see Ned looking up the sky and a plane goes over his head.
The dragon goes over his head.
No, that'd be... Well, either that or possibly if he does stay too long, maybe he actually gets trapped in the timeline or like at a certain point in time.
Like, that or he just doesn't want to leave, period.
Yeah.
So we gotta wonder, does this, you know, adhere to Back to the Future rules of time travel that you could affect the past? Or 12 Monkeys rules of time travel that the time is already written and you're expected to go back into the past and change the events?
Whether time is predetermined.
Time is predetermined.
And we hear the Three-Eyed Raven said, and it's in our intro song too, I put it in there, it's the past is already written, the ink is dry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we listen, we remember. So from his perspective, you can't.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But just that one scene proves that he's
maybe. and then he said he just heard the wind.
Yeah, and that so there's a little bit more to it. So from the Three-Eyed Raven's perspective, don't screw with time. But emotionally, Bran isn't, you know, wants can't may be able to do it through the connection through his dad. So next scene, we're taken back. Then the Three-Eyed Raven does say that he has sat there waiting for Bran, and that's why the the vines have grown through him.
Sat there for 1,000 years.
Yeah, basically waiting. And
that's just lazy.
We would expect him to have a hobby or something in the meantime.
I mean, he did go off and start. He did go off and play in Star Wars, but
well, yeah,
he followed
for 2 seconds.
He followed Captain Phasma to their 2 seconds of glory in Star Wars, and came right back.
But he does reassure Bran. He says, you know, you have to learn everything. You're not going to be here forever, but you must learn everything before you leave. So,
well, so that he can pass it on and pass it on. Just like the Three-Eyed Raven's passing it on to him, he needs to pass it on to somebody else.
Or that he needs to know all this before
affecting
he ventures out.
Timeline.
Yeah.
Before he wargs into Hodor and takes over the Seven Kingdoms.
Well, yeah, maybe.
Or wargs into one of Khaleesi's dragons.
Or giant, or any number of things.
Yeah.
All right. So, next scene. Khaleesi arrives at the Call Widow's Nunnery, as I like to call it. She meets the head of the nunnery, or the Mother Superior.
Mm-hmm.
They strip her of all her clothing and her dragon necklace around her neck. Take it all off. She's given the same garments that everybody else wears in this. It's just a hut.
But unlike season one, we have seen significantly less of Emilia Clarke throughout the show as it's gone on.
Emilia Clarke?
The actress.
Oh, the actress.
Emilia Clarke, yeah.
Yes.
So what you're saying is you're disappointed, not more.
The more famous she got, the less she started to show. Because in season one, I mean, good lord, the woman was like the Kate Winslet of the show.
I feel like throughout the seasons it just became less, you know, like nudity as all.
Yeah,
like with each
season. She's just baiting you. She's the master. So like, while the servant waits, the master baits. Oh, wait, sorry. All right,
I can do that.
So she's brought down to their level. They basically, you know, she's told that she's a wife of a great Khal, and that she probably thought that she would conquer the world, and that.
And he didn't.
Mm-hmm. And
all the wives were told that,
and we thought the same about our husbands, but yet here we are.
We were all young ones.
She's also told that she went out into the world where she should have come to this little hut nunnery instead, and therefore she's going to be judged by the Khalar Vizen, which I'm guessing is their tribal council. I guess, or meeting of the great calls.
They're going to blow her torch out.
They're going to vote her off the island.
Well, they said this is where they decide who they're going to attack, who they're going to, you know.
So, yeah, we've learned that essentially the women have chosen who in the Dothraki, you know, which village they plunder and who they conquer. So, apparently, she's still in a position where she could have an army attack people.
It's not her, it's this council. It's the guys from the council.
Yeah,
right.
The leaders of the armies.
The council is going to decide whether she's killed or she gets to live in the nunnery.
Yeah, the council those are her two that. Choices. But they've said the nunnery has decided who the men attack or who.
I think it's the council she's referring to, not the nunnery.
Okay, well,
I don't think
and
they
then,
have a voice.
And then there's the women in the nunnery who have to decide whether they accept her or not.
So, well, yeah, so it sounds like she's going to be put on trial, essentially.
Yeah.
In front of this.
Well, but as we've seen Khaleesi do before, like, if she's put before any kind of, you know, head of whatever, she always finds a way of conquering them.
So, yeah, it's either they're being us, and they just happen to be assembled. So it's either some sort of a holiday where they get together, or it's just a timed meeting.
It's a big old party.
Where they're getting together to decide what's going to happen the next for the next year or something.
Wiz Khalifa coming.
I don't know. All right, so next we got Varys and Vala the traitor. Good old Varys up to his old tricks.
Oh my god. That was my favorite.
Such an awesome scene.
This was my favorite scene of the whole episode. It was just beautiful.
Yeah, and just how he frames it. Like, he's like, well, she thinks that he's going to torture her. And he's like, oh no. No. I make lives better. I don't destroy them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's like, I've learned. When she says, like, why don't you just bring the soldiers back to torture me? He's like, I don't torture
people. No. That's not what she said. He starts talking to her, and she goes, and he, because he asked somebody, asked one of the guys about the leather he's wearing, because it's so hot, how do you wear that leather?
How do you wear this leather?
And then Vala heard him, I guess, and she goes, well, if you're going to sit here and talk to me, you might as well bring the guys in the leather back. Because what you're doing is torturing, and I'd just soon be tortured by them.
He's like, oh, I don't torture, because I know that people under the duress of torture never give honesty. I make people's lives happier, so they give me the honesty. That entire scene, that they just, like, that ballet of dialogue between the two of them was gorgeous.
Because Varys did what he does best.
Negotiation information gathering.
That is why him and Tyrion are, like, the best, like, duo of this entire show.
Yeah, politics at its best or worst, however you want to look at it. So, basically...
Best. If it was like this, I would actually pay attention to politics.
Yeah, so he brings up her son, Dom, uses that... Says, you know, he's got breathing problems. He knows that. He brings that up to her. He says, I'll put you on a ship. I'll send you that far away, and I'll give you this huge bag of silver, which he can't even pick up. He just kind of kicks, and it is a large bag of silver. Just kind of sitting there, and said, you can start.
Judas didn't even get that much silver.
No, not even close. Speaking of traitors.
I didn't even catch that.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just Varys at his absolute best or worst, depending on how you look at it.
Oh, best.
Yeah. So, anyway, what do you guys think? I mean, what do you think, Aaron?
It was a good scene. I mean, it was probably one of the scenes that shows one of the best parts of the show, the political intrigue, the dialogue, the kind of manipulation of individuals.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brian,
I was going to say the same thing. You can tell the manipulation.
Yeah.
It's cool to see the kind of behind the scenes stuff. It's not all battles and everything else. Some of it is done behind the scenes.
Yeah,
so that's kind of cool.
I miss the banter between him and Littlefinger, and that kind of brought it back.
The rivalry that they had. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, it seems like this that writers love, because you start off, you have two characters that both have goals and both have wants at the beginning of the scene. And just through, like, their dialogue alone, you see that one succeeds, the other one doesn't, or the other one changes their mind. I mean, this is the kind of scene that writers, like, strive for.
Mm. And speaking of good writing, next scene, what I like to call Tyrion and the Games.
That was a fun conversation.
Oh, my God. So,
it's Tyrion... The head of the Unsullied, his girlfriend, or I guess you call her his girlfriend.
Khaleesi's woman in waiting.
Yeah.
He goes, while they're waiting, he goes,
fantastic.
He just tries to make small talk. He goes, let's play a game.
Well, he's like, well, what would you like to talk about?
That's right, yeah.
And he's like, that's a briefing, not a conversation.
He's like, I would talk about my...
my
soldiers.
Our battles and attack plans.
Because neither of these characters have ever said, like, you know, how was your day? And they would tell you about their day. And that's all he wants to do. He wants to small talk with them.
I just want to, like, how are you? Who are you? Let's connect a little bit. And then just, like, nothing.
So he basically, he suggests, we're going to play a game of truth or dare, essentially. And he goes, we'll make it a drinking game. And they go, we don't drink. And then he goes,
very well, I will.
You don't have to drink. Yeah.
I will drink for you, and if you answer the question wrong, I will take a drink.
But I guess we can't play without drinking. Yeah. He finally comes to the realization, and it's just a big circle. So just
Then when, what was it, Varys does come in, he's like, oh, thank God you're here.
Yeah. Basically, yeah, it's kind of like a thing of relief.
Because then he has someone to talk to.
But just another point of the show, you know, that kind of breaks up all the seriousness. Mm-hmm. You have this just funny interaction. So, and maybe even like a different of cultures, you know. Yeah. He's used to the small talk and, you know, the high society where these guys are just slaves and
yeah, he's and used soldiers. To the society of King's Landing where everyone's a noble and he's used to like interacting with everyone mm-hmm. on that level. And
yeah,
that or everyone just gets drunk.
Well, that too.
And he's good at that too, which yep. is, I think, we were determining is like the Lannister way, that every one of them has a really bad drinking problem.
Or yep. a really good drinking pattern.
Or, yes, a really good drinking
pattern. They're just very skillful at drinking.
Because Cersei's, like, getting up there with, like, you know, Tyrion levels of drinking this season.
Yeah, but, yeah, after the Walk of Shame, I guess I can't blame her, even though I don't like her. Okay, so what does Varys find out? He finds out the Sons of the Harpies are being funded by the Masters of Astapher, the Wise Masters of Yonki. I think I'm mispronouncing a lot of them. Yonkai.
Of Yonkers.
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 And their friends in Volantis. So essentially, the two cities they've lost.
Mm. And Sons of Jafar.
And some other... Yeah, Sons of Jafar.
It's almost like it's like a... You know, a D&D, you know, funding provided by. It's like D&D had a PBS and they had, like, the companies that funded them.
But in this case, it reveals, though, that there's a lot of other powerful players mm-hmm. involved. And it's more than just, you know, wars and taking of heads that...
Yeah, it's more than just one group. Yeah. It's actually several groups that are trying to take them down.
Yeah, conspiring together to take them down.
Mm-hmm. Now we have more places on the map that we can, like, see in the opening credits sequence with that awesome animation.
Yeah. And the head of the Unsullied basically says, well, we can attack and we can take this city over.
Yeah, we'll kill them.
And Tyrion's mm-hmm. like, well, that's great, but who's going to protect the city while you guys are doing this? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, basically, Tyrion says, we could possibly fight, we'll see, but let's... He goes to Varys, and Varys, he says, can you send your little birds out to see what they know?
Mm-hmm. And Varys begins greeting little birds again.
Yeah, he basically says, men I do not trust, but little birds, mm-hmm. I do, essentially.
Tyrion needs to go in on a dragon, I'm telling you. It'd be the greatest image in fantasy history.
Riding the dragon.
Riding the dragon, sword, axe, whatever in hand. I mean, battle just, yeah. You know, holding the reins of a dragon on one
Riding
hand.
Riding the dragon, feeling the flow.
is it almost like Dr. Strangelove? Yeehaw!
Oh my Yeehaw! God, that would be beautiful.
But in typical Tyrion fashion, though, he's... wanting the intellect. He's wanting the information first before he disperses his resources.
Because
he's the chess player.
Yeah, as we've seen, every time Tyrion gathers the information, he always finds a way to gather the right information. He's never mm-hmm. been misinformed.
Exactly.
Or has he? Please tell us, viewers. Correct my history.
All right, so speaking of little birds, we find out what little birds really are in the next scene as Cersei's Dr. Qyburn... The one who created the mountain.
The Dr. Frankenstein.
Dr. Frankenstein of the mountain. is using Varys' old little birds, a.k.a. the children, by having them come to them not just for sweets, he does give them that as well, but also for their problems. Because he asks the one boy, he goes, how's your arm and how's your mother's jaw?
There's a bit of give and take for that. Like, they are getting something out of it.
Right.
And they're getting more out of it than what Varys gave them.
Yeah, and he goes, and then the third thing he says, well, is that... Anyway, heard from your father? He goes, no, no one's heard of him. So in other words, they're taking care of their problems for them.
I wonder if it was that guy taking a leak on the wall.
That would be just desserts, probably, but yeah. So, also in the scene, where Cersei reveals that the mountain, that as soon as the the Sparrows, the High Sparrow, files the charges against her that she's going to have the Mountain do her trial by combat for her. Mm-hmm. We find that out because
makes you wonder who the Sparrow would choose, though.
Exactly, and you got to think they have to have somebody in mind. You would think. I don't know.
Mountain being there outmatched, going, "Oh God, I die again! What the hell?"
Yeah.
Why not Marcel, Cersei, and Jaime's cousin?
I don't know if he'd be powerful enough on his own
to take him down. No, come on. We have a monster.
Because it's one-on-one combat.
Mm. I mean, this is essentially Cersei's way of saying we have a Hulk.
I mean, she picks her champion, which is the Mountain, and then they pick their champion. And the gods decide by trial by combat. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It's interesting, though, that, you know, because I hadn't even thought about that up to that point until she brings up that point. That's mm-hmm. what she's thinking. So, but at the same time, as careful as the Sparrows have been, and I know last episode we thought that the Sparrows, and we'll get into it a little bit later, are purely in it for the faith. They seem to have a lot more political mm-hmm. agendas to me. So,
it's the David Koresh.
Well, yeah, we'll see. Also, Cersei orders the doctor to put the little birds everywhere if they hear anything about, not just about who's plotting against them, but if anybody's heard about her having shit thrown on her during her walk of shame, essentially. So
she's whoever still made the comments, whoever was laughing at her during that, or still laughing at her.
Right, exactly. So she's out for revenge still on that one. Typical Cersei.
Well,
you know.
Yeah. So can't blame her.
Yeah, despite, you know, everything she's doing, which is mostly for Tommen.
Yeah.
At this point. And for Jaime, but she still wants her revenge.
Yeah.
Her personal revenge. So, just enough just to let you know it's still there. Okay, so next scene, walk out of the small high council.
That was beautiful.
Or what I like to call just keeping the Lannisters in check. Mm-hmm. So, they open with the tall tale of Dr. Qyburn, who was apparently thrown out of the Citadel mm-hmm. for a good reason for being dangerous, because because
of all his experiments.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah, the Mace are talking about how the Mountain reincarnates like an abomination. Should just be destroyed. And, he had that wah-wah moment
with the Mountain right behind him.
Yeah, it was like, he's right behind me, isn't he?
And he actually farts. You actually hear out.
I mean, seriously, if you were talking crap about the reincarnated Mountain and you saw him standing over you, I would shit my pants too.
I just thought it was funny. I was like, did that really just happen? And I actually rewound it and watched again. I was like, okay. Yep, they did it. So the Lannisters obviously walk in, interrupt this council meeting. Mm-hmm. They kind of forcefully take a seat. And basically, Cersei asks her uncle for help, who's the head of the small council.
Right.
Basically, her uncle says, you know, Lannister say, well, you can't order us to leave. And her uncle says, well, you can't order us to stay. And they kind of walk out.
Let's face it, these high council meetings aren't as cool as they were when this first couple seasons started.
No, it's incredibly weak. It's much weaker, and it's very fractured.
Right, so I mean, I'm not saying that as like a knock against the show. I'm just saying it shows that this council's influence and what they decide on doesn't really matter as much as it used to.
Well, it makes me feel like one of those like HOAs, right? And they all sit down, they're like, so-and-so's grass is 7 inches tall and it needs to be 4.5. Well, you said specifically in the rules.
We measured it.
And they had a white mailbox and it's supposed to be a black mailbox. And
yeah.
That's basically what it sounds like when they're talking.
Maybe it could be like what happened with the that one group in Hot Fuzz. That's what they're going to get involved into.
It really is.
The greater good.
It really is an elderly council. I mean, it's basically the
Old Mother Hubbard.
Yeah, Old Mother Hubbard of Highgarden.
I think one of the reasons this council doesn't really seem to have the same force that it used to is, like, you look at the current hand of the king, and he doesn't really do anything outside the council meetings, or at least not that we're aware of.
Oh, and who, what
well, because he hasn't even hit puberty yet.
Well, let's see what hands of the king we've had before. We've had Ned Stark and Tyrion. How do you measure up to that?
The hand of the king is the uncle.
I thought you said the king.
No,
the hand of the king. Oh, Tywin. Tywin Lannister. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, how do you follow up those three hands of the king in the show?
It's been fractured since Ned was killed.
Yeah.
And you got to know, with Highgarden on the council, that it's not going to be strong anyway, because they've got their own motives going on, especially Marjorie's grandmother.
Yep.
Grandmother. And father.
And her father, yeah. So
I want to get repaid. We invested in you. We want our money back.
Yeah. So
they also want their
daughter out of jail.
Their prince and princess taken out of jail.
Yeah. Brian, what do you think about the Lannisters, with their house essentially divided? How strong can they be against Dorne and all these other adversaries if they're divided?
Well, I think it's going to be one of those families stronger than, you know, than you realize. They'll come together. Even though they're arguing, they're going to come together for the same thing. And
yeah. What do you think, Aaron? Do you think that... can they stand divided? Do you think they'll come together, or do you think they'll remain divided?
Well, I think Jaime and Cersei will, you know, stand together. As for everyone else, not necessarily. But to be honest, they don't really need the rest of the council or, you know, her uncle or anyone else. I mean, in order to, you know, control the army or have, you know, the mountain going on a killing rampage, more or less.
Okay. That's fair. What do you think, Stephanie?
Do I think the divided house? I think that... no, I'm not going to be quiet.
Not you.
I know. I think blood is thicker than water, but I'm not sure if the uncle believes that. I think he thinks what Jaime and Cersei have done in their lives is probably wrong, and he doesn't agree with all the choices they've made. But it'll be interesting to see where it comes to with Dorne.
Yeah, yeah. Because I don't see how they can, you know, especially if their uncle isn't with them. I don't see how they're going to be able to stand against Dorne. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So, next scene: Little King Tommen confronts the High Sparrow. Apparently, there's somebody at the door. All right,
just silence that doorbell.
I know, right?
Just put it on vibrate or silence.
The vibrating doorbell.
Ew.
So, next scene.
We have a lot of female visitors.
Yeah. We've come to sit by your spin cycle.
What does that mean, anyway?
All right. Well, speaking of demanding, King Tommen comes in with his guard and demands the release of his queen, his wife. And that his mother is be allowed to see Marcella's grave, which currently she is not, apparently. Hmm. And the Sparrow says that's not yet possible for either, before their trial. Now, this is where, again, I see...
Yeah, she hasn't atoned for her sins.
Yeah, she hasn't atoned for her sins yet, even though she had the walk of shame. But she still has to sit before the seven High Sparrows and whatnot. So, my question is... this is really where you see, I think, the political side or the cunning of the High Sparrow, because not only does he disarm Tommen, get him to take away his guards from the building or out of the room, I'm sorry, but also you see him you see him get sympathy from him. He's like, oh, my knees, I need to sit down. And then he gets Tommen to sit next to him. He keeps trying.
You think that was like a small little power play?
Yeah. Oh, no, yeah. Okay, no. Because he hits him with that dogma bullshit about the mother's love.
He's trying to be a preacher.
I was going to bring up something, actually. That is, you know, I talked about, like, the Varys scene is what writers strive for. That scene right there with King Tommen and the High Sparrow is what directors strive for, because that is blocking at its finest. You have your actors on one side, and then you have them removed from the scene, and then you have one actor leading the other actor, you know, says, I choose to sit down, and then he sits down with them. I mean, that right there is what a director would say to, like, convey to the audience, yeah, he still has power over the other guy.
Yeah, yeah, he's still pulling the strings on him.
Yeah.
It just seemed weird, because he was, you know, every time he gets threatened, have you noticed that he goes, go ahead, kill me. Make me a martyr. You know, like...
Yeah.
Like...
It's like, oh, do you feel something?
I would have done it already.
Right.
I would already run you through. I'm sorry. Yeah, I would have done it.
It's like somebody who's
been given a job and somebody accuses him, someone says, oh, you want the job? Here, fine, you take it. You know, it's the same mentality. He's totally disarming them and taking that away. He's like, here, you want to do something? Do it. Yeah. I dare you.
I dare you to do it.
You know what? I just realized it. This is Gandhi if he was evil.
In some ways, yeah.
This is evil Gandhi.
Well, a more violent one.
Right. I mean...
Well, I think you're just...
That's what I'm saying. It's evil Gandhi.
It reminds me a lot. I mean, this Game of Thrones, I mean, yeah, it's based in the same time. It 100% reminds me of all the stuff we learned in, like, middle school about, like, medieval times and, like, the church trying to take over and everything else. And it's like...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's 100% what this is playing out like.
Yeah, exactly. And he just...
I think that's why I don't like it.
This is the peaceful Spanish Inquisition, in a way. Yeah. This is if the guy at the head of the Spanish Inquisition was Gandhi. It's the Gandhi Inquisition.
He's like, oh yeah? Oh yeah? Well, I'm not eating.
Yeah, hasn't he gone on hunger strikes before?
Yeah.
And in typical Tommen fashion, because he wants to be a good king, because I really think the kid does want to be a good king,
yeah.
That he actually backs down.
Uh-huh. Well, this is one of those scenes that really shows Tommen's naivety and just kind of weakness in a lot of ways, where, like... You almost see him starting to take advice on, like, how to be a good king from the guy who's more or less keeping his wife hostage.
And, right. And made his mother walk through the city naked with having shit and pissed.
You see, like, the sparrow kind of leading him on in conversation, talking about what it means to be a good person and a good leader. And you see him like, oh, that makes sense.
Well, yeah. Does it make sense then in the last episode, Tommen's sitting there with his mother and teach me how to be a good king, mother. Teach me, please. I want
to
learn
from
you.
Teach me how to Dougie.
And
teach
then, yeah, teach me how to Dougie. Yeah. And then,
teach me how to kingy. Teach me how to kingy. Teach me
and
how to
kingy. I can't hit him. I can hit you. So.
Aw.
Uh-oh.
Stop.
He's allowed, you're not. Anyway, so I'm getting beat up by my husband, whatever. Anyway, so, yeah. So the week before you have Tommen... Yeah, I know, right? So you have Tommen going to his mom saying, teach me how to be a good king. And then this week, on this episode, you go to the High Sparrow telling him, oh, yes, come sit with me. I'll tell you how to do all this. And, you know... You want to be a kind, sweet little boy, not anything like what your mother is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's almost pulling it like a Jedi mind trick.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Don't listen to your mother. Listen to me. Yeah. I'm telling you which way to go.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, exactly. Tommen, there's this guy up at the black, you know, at the north wall up there who tried to do the right thing and tried to do the right thing. Look at what happened to him, and you don't quite have a red witch to bring you back.
No, but they got Dr. Kibben.
That's true, they do.
The zombie king.
The zombie king. I was thinking the exact same words.
So, yeah, it just shows, you know, Tommen just weak. You know, that's what happens. He's
being
manipulated.
Well, I mean,
he's trying.
Downside to having a 10-year-old as king.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's doing the best he can at whatever, 13, whatever he is, 10, 13, I guess. I don't know. All right, next scene. Arya's second chance. So we're taken back to the temple of the many-faced god, and we see Arya finally adapting to being blind. She's using her skills. She gets beat up at first in the temple by the other girl, but then eventually, over time, she finally learns to master fighting blind. And she also shows some apothecary skills, like trying to figure out what's what and smelling what's what.
Just by the sense of smell.
The sense of smell. So...
The Jedi training montage.
Your eyes can deceive you. Do not trust them.
Yeah, exactly. Precisely. And then her master basically kind of puts her through a test. He says, if you're truly no one, then the girl has nothing to fear. But he gives her the water, which has obviously killed everybody else. She takes it.
It's like, if you have truly given yourself to this cause,
if you're truly no one, you have nothing to fear.
You have nothing to fear.
But... And Brian had brought me and Brian were talking about this before the show. Because of those apothecary skills, she takes the water, she smells it first, and then she drinks it. So does she know that water is not poison, but is in fact the remedy for her blindness that she was originally given? Is that a possibility? What do you guys think about that?
That would be a lot of backstory to cover.
It's a possibility, but I don't think the show would ever go into it if that was the case.
George Lucas would. He would break down every, like, you know.
To be honest, I think the show's probably going to keep with the more like religious symbolism of it, mm-hmm. more so than like going into.
So what was the apothecary one?
That yeah, in? Because why would they put that scene in?
There? And that's what I was thinking. It's like maybe like
the it may have just been like atmospheric, you know, or just like something that shows what she's learning. I mean,
it could be, or she could remember what the water smelled like, and she knew what was in it. So you know, it's acidic. So yeah. She made a base, and she had the base in her mouth when she took the drink. I don't know. It was just something odd. You know, we just saw it. It was kind of odd.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. It was just part of the entire training thing she was going through, and you have her just kind of adapting to being blind and going through the daily routine that she normally did before. Because even before she goes blind, she is in charge of, like, taking care of dead bodies and going through some of the preparation work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, maybe. I don't know. Maybe either war. We'll see. Next scene, the House of Umber's gift to Ramsay, you sons of bitches.
The Boltons, dear God, the Boltons.
So the head of the Umber family comes to the table of Ramsay and the head of the Karstarks, or the Karstarks, whatever they are. Basically, he says, John has let the wildlings across the wall. We're going to have to fight him. I need your help. he insults when Ramsay says that he has to kneel before him. He basically says, well, your father was, pardon my French, I'm only quoting the show, Stephanie, your father was a cunt and that's why you killed him. My father was a cunt. If he hadn't died, I probably would have had to kill him too.
A lot of men were called cunts in this scene.
Apparently, yes. I guess it was a little
and
more
you have that
cunt.
Kind of dialogue. Well, you've had other people that have kneeled before you, and their honor wasn't worth shit.
Yeah, I think
so.
It's kind of an irony that the North is a bit more... The North in Game of Thrones is a bit more, how should I say, loose with their tongues than the South is.
Well,
yeah, as opposed to, like, in America.
I was going
to
say the South seems really refined and...
Well, it could be a reference to how in Europe,
and the
like,
North
the,
is more, like,
more barbaric
yeah,
areas.
It could
like,
have been, yeah.
Irish and the Scots and...
Yeah,
you know.
That's a fair... Or Viking, even.
Yeah.
Yeah. Many ways. Or that would might be the Wyland would be more of the Viking.
God, our country so backwards.
So Ramsay says again, well, you got to kneel before me if you want my help. He refuses, and instead he says, I have a gift for you. First, you see the wild girl that was with Reckon Stark last time we saw him. Supposed to be helping him. Then he says, well, here's the boy. Here's the boy, and he also points out that, and for the head of the Karstark family, because he likes the boys, apparently he's saying he's gay.
Well, he's saying he's pedophile.
Yeah, essentially a pedophile. And he reveals, this is Rickon Stark, and Ramsay says, well, where's the proof? And he brings up the head of the direwolf. His direwolf. So
these direwolves don't have long lives. I mean, there's...
Well, a lot of things don't have a lot of long lives
well,
in this
yeah,
show.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
Except for Jon Snow, he's got two.
So far.
And his direwolf, we love you, Ghost, has yet to, you know, be removed.
So, yeah, so Ramsay, and the scene ends with Ramsay saying, welcome home, Lord Stark.
Have you met my dogs?
What? Let's just go around the table, and we'll start with Brian. What do you think is going to happen to him?
Let's
guess.
At first, I'm with Steph. I really thought it was going to be he's just going to feed him to the dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's getting rid of all of his competition.
Yeah.
The instant his brother was born, he got rid of the competition, like, instantly. Like
yeah.
But I think it's going to be one of those holding for, you know, like, put him in the tower.
Uh-huh.
Holding him as his card to play when the time comes. When it becomes bastard versus bastard. You know, when it's him versus Jon Snow, I think he's going to play that card and be like...
Yeah, Ramsay knows that... I mean, that he's been told many times that in order to secure the North, you need a Stark. Mm-hmm. He lost Sansa. He knows Jon is out there. So, yeah, he's got to keep one Stark in order to, you know...
Yeah, it might give him some claim to some of the other houses in the North. That, you know, might not have fallen him, you know, otherwise.
Okay. Steph, what do you think?
I think he's going to hold Rickon as a
little chess piece, like everyone else is going around saying. Mm-hmm. And I think it's he's going to do it to, A, try to bring Sansa back. B, he thinks Jon is over at the wall and not left or anything yet.
Spoiler alert.
So, shut up. I know. I said it way earlier, too.
Why? It's all right. I'm just messing with
you. I know. But I think he's going to be a little chess piece. And the way he said it, though, gives me the creeps.
Yeah.
That just, I was like, no. But, you know, whatever. I think everyone else that watched the show probably said that, too. Yeah. And threw something at their TV, but what?
The Boltons are now like.
But yeah, I think it's going to be a chess piece. I think Rickon's just going to be like a pawn.
Well, and I will agree with that, and I'll take it a step further. I think he's going to keep him as a pawn in case Sansa doesn't come back. He may use him to get Sansa back. He may
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. He may use him if Jon Snow attacks. But I also think he's going to do this.
Here's your brother.
Yeah, I also think. He's going to do the same thing to him that he did to Theon. I think he's going to
just like torture the shit
out of him and get him to pledge his loyalty to him, therefore making him the legitimate
Lord of the North.
Lord of the North. Mm. So that's just my two cents on it. So
there is no good thing that comes out of the House of Bolton.
No, not one thing.
There's seriously
everything nothing. That's good he kills.
Yes.
Not even Michael.
Michael. Definitely not Michael Bolton. Oh, dear God.
Unless he went on to go work at Initech.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's a lot of mashing.
All of a sudden, Game of Thrones started playing rap music.
It's a lot of mashing.
Damn, it feels good to be a Lannister.
It's a lot of mashing of different things, boys. All right.
Well, it's more just a movie reference and then a small musical reference. And
then a musical reference on top of the movie reference of the TV show.
Well, it's coming back to the movie reference there.
And we bring it back full circle.
And
speaking of full circle.
Full circle. The last scene of the episode, what I like to call My Watch Has Ended. Jon Snow, still Lord and Commander of the Wall after being resurrected, goes out to oversee the hanging of those who betrayed him and killed him. He essentially asks for the last words. The first guy says he shouldn't be alive. John kind of counters with, well, he says, the first guy says he shouldn't be alive and it's not right. And he said, well, neither was killing me. John counters with that. The next guy basically asks for mercy and asks that he write his mother and tell him that he died fighting the wildlings and wasn't a traitor. Then we get to Sir Alistair. he prays that he would make the same choice again if given the same circumstances for letting the wildlings come in. He says he's going to rest, but he tells Jon Snow that he will go on fighting their battles, not his battles, their battles forever. And finally, we come to the kid who just says nothing, just stares at him.
That kid.
John cuts the rope. They all hang, they die. He gives the Lord Commander jacket to his friend.
Their eyes turn white almost instantly.
Yeah, almost instantly, yeah. And they've been blue and gray. It was kind of creepy. But John gives his Lord Commander jacket to his friend, says the Castle Black is his.
Oh, no, before that he says...
Burn the bodies.
He says burn.
He says, yeah. You need to burn the bodies. He says, no, you burn the bodies. I'm done.
That's right.
My watch is ended. Hands over his jacket and walks out.
Jon Snow mic drop.
His watch ended when he got killed.
So,
I pledge my life.
Essentially, it did.
Yeah. So, let's recap here. So, Bolton has his brother. The wildlings are coming in from
White Walkers.
The White Walkers are on the other side of the wall.
Are you sure? We didn't get to see them.
Well, we're pretty sure.
I haven't seen them yet, even though they were on the cliffhanger from last season.
Well,
they're going to be at the cliffhanger of this season too.
Maybe
they're coming.
They're coming.
So, sure it is. Winter's coming again.
Again,
still.
But Mark anyway, two.
Winter continues.
So you got the Boltons to the south, who are basically going to invade. We know that's coming. And to the north, you've got what will eventually be the White Walkers. And Jon Snow, the one guy who could possibly lead them out of both, has just given up and turned over his command and has walked out on everything.
Yeah, it was just kind of at the shed.
Even though he has no idea what's going on in the south.
As long as he doesn't turn over his Valyrian sword, we're good.
But I don't know, where do we go from now? And let's just square real quick, Brian.
I don't even know.
Yeah.
I mean, I already told you guys. I mean, I didn't like this. I didn't care for this episode. Mm-hmm. It felt like it was... First episode felt like a setup. Yeah. Second episode felt like, okay, we're getting somewhere. This is action.
Yep.
Third episode feels like it's a setup again. It's like, there's only 10 episodes. Come on. So where we go from here? Hopefully action scenes?
I think that's definitely coming.
Well, it can't all be action.
It can.
No, it can't.
hopefully more action scenes we see in the next one.
Wait, the guy with the two broadswords wasn't enough?
Well, no, I really like that. It was like my favorite part of the whole show.
But where do you think John goes? I guess was my question. Sorry.
Yeah, you know, I think John's heading home.
Okay, heading back for Winterfell. Okay. Steph, what do you think?
I think he's heading back to Winterfell also, and it'll be like Melisandre said. She sees him in the battle for Winterfell, mm-hmm. and it's going to be a battle of Bolton and his army, and I'm hoping to God, because they show in the previews that Sansa gets to Castle Black, and of course Jon's already left, so I'm hoping she gets over there, talks to his friends, and says, hey, you need to go over here and take back my home too.
Yeah, get
and
John
they go
back.
Help Jon, and the wildlings go help and kill, murder everybody, and everybody's cool. And Winterfell becomes the Starks again, and everybody's happy.
Wouldn't that essentially be abandoning like the wall, though, at that scenario?
They could leave a couple. It's a big, giant wall.
Yeah, but there's like...
Donald Trump would not approve. You know what? Winter's coming. If you know what? It's going to come. We're fine.
Okay.
Johnny?
I don't know.
You know...
Where's Jon Snow go?
Jon Snow?
Where's Jon Snow go? Hopefully in the bathroom like everyone else. Yeah, hopefully back to Winterfell. And hopefully he takes the wildlings, like you said. And how satisfying would it be to have that giant wildling with him and get a hold of Ramsay and have just say, hey, giant, here's Ramsay.
Just kind of hold him. Just pop.
I don't know. I think
can we throw him to the dogs?
I was going to say, actually, I think it would be even better is if Ramsay lets his dogs go and the giant grabs the dogs and just... crushes their heads together.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be funny.
He's like swats him like, you know, like a gnat on his
getting
arm.
My bloodlust up. I'm liking it. You must die, Ramsay, die. Aaron, where's Jon Snow go?
Tavern.
To a tavern? Yeah. Get drunk?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, he died.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Something I would need a good stiff
coming
drink.
Back from the dead is a good reason to drink.
Goes, gets a drink, gets laid. Or,
drink,
know.
Drinks yeah. and whores his way for a while.
Finds a redhead to fill in the void for a little while.
Ew, that's his sister.
Oh, God,
no,
I wasn't
no,
even
no,
going
no,
there.
No,
I was
no,
thinking
the
about
redhead.
The redhead, she's a redhead.
I was
redhead
thinking about your Greek, the wildling.
Yeah.
You said redhead, so Sansa,
yeesh.
Move on.
Wow, I was not going there.
Well,
that
just turned south quickly.
Very quickly.
Hey,
we just turned Jon Snow into a Lannister.
Jaime and Cersei getting at it, and their brother, sister, nothing stopping them.
Yeah, but we're assuming he's a Targaryen. More so
than a Lannister.
And he's also a Stark, so he has to... Yeah, he can't go that road. All right.
He's a Stargaryen?
Yeah. He is,
Stargaryen
actually.
Raised Stargaryen raised a Stark, so yeah.
He's a Stargaryen.
Stargaryen.
Is that someone who looks at the stars?
No.
I think...
That's a Stargazer.
Oh, okay.
It's someone who believes they
what,
can just
Brian?
Survive off starlight.
In some ways, Aaron, I think you're right. I think he's walking away for a while. I think Sir Alistair may have gotten to him. I think just kind of brought out what he's been feeling. I think he's lost. I think he's broken because he's come, you know, because...
And everybody's seen his tiny pecker.
And he's been murdered for doing the right thing. So, yeah, he does...
Songs will be written.
I think he needs to...
Small songs.
Yeah. I think he needs to go off and be by himself for a little while and
you know,
try to figure some things out.
You know, so. Maybe like another rightful heir, he'll go out into a rowboat for a very long extended period of time.
Old man. Maybe they'll find each other.
Old
crash.
Old snow in the sea. All right. Okay. Well, I think we covered this episode pretty well, so let's just get into final thoughts and grades. Oh, 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 oh. Mr. Inkenbauer, I'll give you the honor of the first final thought and grade.
Oh, well, thanks. Are we doing alphabet grades, or are we doing sword grades? Well, how do we do this? This is my first episode.
You know, we haven't been doing this.
Just letter grades.
We just do letter grades for now, but we haven't been doing the sword grade yet, so.
Okay, well, I'm going to do swords.
Okay, fine.
Those are S words, Mr. Connery. Yeah.
Describe your scale so they know.
So, like, with, like, the scale being one sword being the worst and five swords being the best, I'm going to give it a 3 swords.
3 out of 5 swords.
3 out of 5 swords. Because, I mean, the episode, it did have, like John said, it did have the battle scene between the knights, which was pretty badass. And I don't know if anybody's seen the Jedi where somebody's turned the swords into lightsabers. Oh my gosh, it's amazing. But
I loved it.
Yeah, so it had that scene in it, and it had some funny scenes between Jon Snow and the Wildling leader, you know, and so it had a little bit in it, but it just wasn't up to par for what I was hoping it would be, so I'm just going to give it a 3.
Okay. I will jump in next. I'll just, if we're going to use that scale, I was going to give it 8A, so I will actually give it a 5 out of 5. I thought...
5 swords out of 5 swords?
5 swords out of 5 swords. Hmm. Maybe not an A+, maybe more of an A-, but...
So 4.5 swords.
So 4.5 swords, maybe.
4 3/4 swords?
It's... Okay, we're not doing that. Okay. Maybe it wasn't quite as good as the last episode, but hey, it's hard to be bringing back Jon Snow from the dead. I mean, that's the ultimate high. This was kind of a more of a low episode. As the roller coaster goes, we had to come back down off that high. Once again, it was jam-packed with information. It had a lot of backstory. We got to see Bran learn Ned Stark is not the legend, the Superman that he thought that he was. And when the world needs the old Jon Snow back the most, he's at a moment where he's just a shadow of himself, and he's very fractured. So I'm interested to see where that goes, obviously, and just more reasons to love Game of Thrones. So, Stephanie, final thought and grade?
Grade? 3.5 swords. I really liked... I thought this episode was kind of fitting for Mother's Day.
Okay.
Because it showed on Mother's Day, and I told John this when we were watching. I was like, oh, this was kind of a cool little Mother's Day special. Because they showed a lot of stuff about mothers. They finally showed Geely again with little Sam and Big Sam, and then they talked about Tommen and his mother, and the High Sparrow talked about mother's love, and then you had
all the call widows.
Yeah, all the call widows, and mm-hmm. you know, wherever those kids are.
And
and then, yeah, I brought up the whole Lyanna giving birth to possibly Jay in R plus L equals J.
And the Vala, too, like the mother of the son with the mm-hmm. breeding problem.
So, yeah, there was a lot of motherly, you know, discussions. And so, yeah. So, but I give it 3.5 because, yeah, it was kind of, you know, long-winded and things like that. And, My favorite parts of the episode were Varys and Vala. Obviously, the sword fight between the Morning Sword and Ned. That was just wow. And then Rickon. Finally seeing Rickon at the end was just like, yay, but no! And, yeah. So that's my grade and thought.
Alright. Aaron?
I guess if we're going with the sword grading system, 3.5 to 4 swords. It's a good setup episode. I mean, it had some decent moments, decent backstory, and I think it's kind of setting up the next episode for, you know, kind of being a bit more, you know, eventful and action packed. So I thought it was a good episode overall.
Okay, cool. Johnny?
Definitely 4 swords, maybe even bordering on 4 swords and a dagger.
I'll call the half sword a dagger. Yes,
a small. Okay, no, I'm not saying that.
Hey, that's what killed the
guy. He's like 4 swords and a small pecker.
4 swords and a Jon Snow.
That's how I know you're not a god.
or a sword of the morning. You know,
morning wood.
What killed the sword of the morning? No, just because. Yeah, like you said, you had that great sword battle. You had that moment with Rickon, and for me, that Varys Vala dialogue was just untouchable. I mean, again,
from someone who tries to write good scenes and, you know, wants to know how to direct, I mean, this Game of Thrones is one of those shows. It's like, it's consistently, if you, the more you look at it like we do, the more you see that there is so much great dialogue, there's so much great directing, there's more in it than just fantastic effects and wonderful settings. I mean, it is a very well-written, well-produced, well-acted. I mean, this is what a great show is supposed to be. And you can't always have incredible high notes like we had in the last episode. So yeah, this is like that mixtape where you have that one song that you love and then you just come down a little bit so that you work your way back into the next one. I mean, it's playing with the audience. It's saying, what are we building up to? I mean, it gets your interest going. It's... You know, that's why I say it borders on the 4.5, you know, the four swords and a dagger thing, because it gets you interested to see where it goes again, and that's what a great show should do.
Copy that there. I'm going to start calling you John Cusack with your...
My high fidelity ratings. You know, I mean, but Blackwater is a solid 10 swords. That is the apex of...
That was one of the highlights of the series.
That
so
needs
far.
To be on IMAX.
Yeah, actually, I think we've mentioned that before.
Yeah. All right, so real quick, where can you find Four Midwest Guys? I'll make it real easy. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, email, just about everything else that we're on. YouTube, even just by going to Google or any search engine and putting in the following. Put in the number 4, Midwest Guys, and you'll be able to find all of us there. Our Twitters continue to increase. We're almost at 1,100 on the main page. I think, Brian, you're at what, over...
Like 2,300 or more.
2,300. Where can people find you, by the way, on Twitter?
AnkZone.
Okay, at AnkZone.
At AnkZone.
And you can find me at BWillie1977 personally as well. If you guys want to talk anything, I'm always open to that. Also, just one thing. We'd like a little bit of feedback. Let us know how we're doing. If you like these podcasts, if you don't, anything... critique, good, bad, or otherwise, let us know. So we really like to hear from you. We would really love to hear your questions, to be honest. So reach out to us.
Or your theories.
Or your theories. Throw us out Facebook, on Twitter, even email. Throw us a line. Have your questions. We'll make sure to give you credit for it on the show, and we'd be more than happy to answer it and research it for you. So, all right. Aaron, thanks for joining us, sir.
Yeah, no problem.
Johnny Z, as always.
Everything's better with some wine in the belly.
There you go. And Stephanie.
Yeah.
The queen of tits and wine.
Huh? Yes. What's going on here? What?
Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And Mr. Eckebauer, welcome. Welcome, yeah. Sir.
Thanks for having me, man.
All right. And for me, B. Willie saying, don't love any of the characters. They'll just get killed off.
So should we love Ramsay Bolton?
Yes. Love Ramsay Bolton.
Love him to death.
Love him to death.
Love him where you just want to see him torn to pieces.